Hello, and thank you for listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Joan Pardis. I'm in the studio today on this beautiful day with Jeff Brown as my engineer and producer of this edition. And it is a terrific day out there, as we all know. And I'm looking at the weather forecast, and it looks like we have sun right through the week, Saturday through Sunday. Stay tuned. We have a great show, lots of local guests here in the studio to talk about a lot of exciting stuff coming up. So stay tuned, and we'll be back.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Leaders in the United Methodist Church in Oklahoma are disagreeing with the minister's efforts to remove a Native American symbol from the state's vehicle license plate. KGOU's Kirk Gortney has more.
The Reverend Keith Cressman says the image that appears on standard license plates in Oklahoma of an Apache warrior shooting an arrow into the sky to bring rain is an affront to his Christianity. The United Methodist pastor is suing the state, saying the image makes him a mobile billboard for a myth he doesn't believe. But another United Methodist pastor, the Reverend Dr. David Wilson, disagrees. He's the leader of the Oklahoma Indian Missionary Conference and a member of the Choctaw Nation. Wilson says Cressman's reference to the Native American symbol on the tag as pagan hurts.
And those words my grandfather and his parents, grandmother and her parents, would have been called a long, long time ago. And gosh, this is 2014, and people are still referring to our ways and religious objects, you know, such as beautiful pieces of art as pagan, which is pretty amazing.
Wilson is also supported in his views by the United Methodist Bishop in Oklahoma, Robert Hayes. The bishop says Cressman's lawsuit is a distraction to ongoing healing relationships with Native Americans. In 2012, the top legislative body for the United Methodist Church held an act of repentance toward healing relationships with indigenous peoples in recognition of poor treatment in the past. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney.
An early morning fire has destroyed the Tribal Administration Building on the Colville Reservation in Washington. The Associated Press reports Colville Tribe's Chairman Michael Finley says the three-story building is a total loss. Tribal records are said to have been destroyed. No word yet on how the fire started. Skateboarding is a popular activity among many Native youth, but there are some young people who say there's a lack of skate parks in their communities. National Native News intern Polly Danette Claw brings us a story of a young Navajo man who's trying to change that. Nelson Kiefert has been waiting years for a skate park to be built in his hometown of Shiprock, New Mexico. The Navajo man created the All or Nothing Skate Tour. He's traveling more than 1,000 miles on his longboard from his reservation to Washington State. The 20-year-old is using the tour as a way to raise awareness about what he says is a need for a skate park in his community and says it could have a positive effect on youth.
All I see is just potential going to waste. Instead of having a place to let their energy out and have some fun, most people, they just sit around or decide to go have a party, turn to drugs and stuff like that. Having a skate park just keep them busy and out of trouble.
Kiefert says the park would also keep local skaters from walking or hitchhiking to the nearby one in a border town about 30 miles away. He says a couple of his friends were fatally hit by vehicles while walking and skating to that park. Along his journey, Kiefert has been collecting donations and networking with skate companies. His goal is to raise $1.2 million to build the Shiprock Skate Park. For National Native News, I'm Polly Danette Claw. More information about the All or Nothing Skate Tour can be found online at sk8tour.info. The Indian Hospital in Gallup, New Mexico is the first Indian Health Service facility to be designated as a Level 3 trauma center. The IHS says the designation means the Gallup Indian Medical Center has the staff, training, equipment, supplies, and policies to provide trauma care to injured patients and can help improve survival rates. The Gallup Hospital collaborated with regional organizations, emergency medical services, and the state to obtain the designation. IHS says the Level 3 Trauma Center became official in June. During this month, annually, Pacific Northwest tribes take part in a canoe journey. They canoe to neighboring nations and celebrate language, culture, and fishing. The first such event began in the 1990s, and today the canoe journey includes tribes from the U.S. and around the world. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello, you are listening to Juno Afternoon. It is the Monday edition, Monday, July 29th. It is a fantastic day in Alaska's capital city. I'm Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is running the board and producing the show. And in the studio with me right now, we have Carrie Groven from the Juno Arts and Humanity Council and Kathleen Harper and Art Roach from Perseverance Theater. Hi, guys.
Hi, John.
Hello.
And they are here to talk about a unique training, a set of training workshops that are coming up that's a collaboration between these two organizations, Juno Arts and Humanity Council and Perseverance Theater and Community Schools. So, Kathleen, I understand you're the first designated speaker. So, tell me about these workshops that are entitled Technically Art.
They're a series of workshops with, we've kind of broken them down into three different sort of focuses. The first, they're calling them series. One, focusing on interacting with audiences, so all of the front of house type things that volunteers for arts groups might be doing, such as ticket taking, helping out with the back of house, so that would be things like hospitality and those sorts of things for the big Jack events that happen at the high school or other places, selling concessions, how to deal with selling tickets and box office type concerns. So that's the first section. Then we've also got a section that's focusing on behind the scenes. And the two things we've got are a stage crew kind of behind the scenes look at the JDHS auditorium and all of the things that you might need to know if you were ever to become a stage crew person for them, for any of the big events that happen there. And then also Art will be teaching a lighting for anybody course, as we're now calling it. So anybody who's interested in lighting or wants to know how to interact with lighting designers or wants to know how to do it themselves, it's a series of courses to help people delve into the mysteries of lighting.
Kathleen, I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
So I know there's more information,
yes,
but I want to roll it back. So that first set of workshops, all these workshops are open to people who are interested to volunteer with art organizations in town. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, to help, and so I know there's lots of different volunteer opportunities in town as far as what you were just saying, taking tickets and doing concessions and back of house for the big Jack stuff, hospitality, and obviously you need lighting crew and so on and so forth. So if I'm listening and I say, oh, wow, I didn't know about these volunteer opportunities, how would people, like, is this like the first step to get the training and then find out where your skill set best lies as far as helping out the three organizations that we're talking about now or more, obviously?
I would say this is a very good first step, especially if any of the places that you're here or any of the workshops that you're hearing about are things that you're specifically interested in. It's the best place to start learning exactly what that means. Some people think, oh, hey, you know, it'd be really fun to usher, and I've never done it before, and I'm going to do it. But you may not know what that actually means in terms of the time commitment and what will be expected of you and all of that sort of good stuff. So this is an opportunity for the arts groups to say, you're interested in these things, come, we'll show you what that means. We'll give you all the tips and tools and pointers that you need to be able to do this successfully and have a good time, but also be useful.
Great.
And it's not only for volunteers. For example, the section that we didn't get to about producing events and all the things that you need to know about and think about and plan for when you're producing an event, that could be for anyone who does that job as a part of their regular work or as a volunteer for an organization. And we're very excited to be able to offer this training in Juneau now.
Great. So let's go by section by section by section. I just had those questions as far as who the target audience is and how do you participate. So as a volunteer, besides just doing it because you want to do it, are there perks of volunteering? Like if you're an usher, I guess you get to see the show. I mean, I don't know.
Yes, indeed. For the Arts Council events, and I know many other of the arts groups events, the people that volunteer, they get to see the show for free unless you work backstage, and then you get kind of a different view of the production. Also, wanted to say the stage crew part, which is hugely important, and we really want to try and get the stage crew people coming in because the Juneau Douglas High School is not going to offer that as a part of their kind of crew anymore. So the people that take this workshop, learning about being a stage crew and like how to handle all the gear backstage and making things go up and down and all that kind of stuff, they get sort of a certification and will be the first people that we go to, that the Arts Council go to and the other other arts groups go to when they need these people for our events, and very likely they will get paid.
Okay.
As well.
And I would assume with the vibrant arts community that we have in Juneau that it is largely fueled by volunteers, that volunteers are essential to the piece. Is that correct? I mean, like the volunteers to usher and so on and so forth. So there's you want to do it because you want to be part of the art community, but it also keeps on fueling the art machine in Juneau. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So let's go back. I'm sorry I interrupted you, Kathleen. So let's talk about that first set of workshops. So that's the ushering, the front of house, the ticketing, the cash handling, so on and so forth.
Yes. And Nancy DiCerni and I, we're going to be covering that section of the workshops.
And when does that take place?
It's the whole set of workshops are August 9th through the 11th, and you can go onto our website, jahc.org, to get the details of when and where.
Okay, sounds great. And Kathleen, okay, so we were talking about the front of house, the backstage, and then we were just getting into the production stage, event managing, so on and so forth, or were we at lighting and event? You have so many different things
there. Well, it'd probably be good for Art to maybe take a little moment to say something about the lighting section.
Is that all right?
Yes,
putting him on the spot.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. So my background, I run Perseverance Theater. My Master of Fine Arts degree is in design, and I trained in lighting and set design. And the goal of the workshop for me is just to demystify the process of what lighting design is. I mean, at the end of the day, when I work on a project as a lighting designer, I think of myself as just one other person who's helping to tell a story. And I'm working with the writer, whether they're living or dead, the actors, the director, the other designers, and the stage manager, and we're collaborating to tell a story. But there's some specific things that I use that no one else uses, and specific tools and specific vocabulary. I can make the world a certain color. I can make it light. I can make it dark. I can help you know where to look. I can make it move at a certain pace. And those are all sort of tools in the toolbox of the lighting designer. So the purpose of this little 3-day workshop, it's 3 2-hour sessions, is to sort of open up that mysterious box of what lighting design is and help people understand what it is. And I tried to divide it into 3 sections. So the first one is really good for anyone that collaborates or is interested in what light can do. So it's the vocabulary of light, the sort of the properties of light, and the way that a person can make an intentional choice about what kind of story I'm trying to tell through a lighting moment and how it connects to what an actor might be saying or doing or what a writer might have written, that sort of thing. And that first session will be really good for anybody, especially budding lighting designers, but also actors or directors would be really good for this. I think stage managers would be good for this. Writers would be really good for this. Anyone who's ever written a stage direction, say, the sun comes up, you might want to know how someone's actually going to do that in a theater and what reading that would make a designer think about. And then the second day, which is Saturday afternoon, we're going to go into, okay, you've got your idea. You've decided what story you're going to tell. You've talked it over with the director. We'll go over how a designer might talk to a director about ideas. Now, how do you then make a plan to make all that happen? And that'll be where we'll look at what the equipment can do and how you allocate equipment to a set of ideas and sort of a little bit of understanding of the properties of light and color, that sort of thing, and what that is. And then the third day, we'll go into the theater and we'll actually work with the lights and you know, learn how to put them up and how to take the lighting designer's plan, which has been put on paper, and make it happen in the theater itself. And we'll sort of put some lights up, figure out how to make them turn on, how to color them, and then how to cue using one of the intelligent lighting consoles in town, how to program a cue. So you get a really kind of from the eureka moment of, oh, I want this moment on stage to look like this, to actually making it happen, a real basic introductory look at the whole process from A to Z.
Wow, that sounds like a fascinating workshop.
Should be fun. Yeah.
And this is all free?
It's all free.
Okay. So if you're just joining us, Art Rich was just talking about the lighting workshop that he's going to be teaching, but it's part of a whole technically art training opportunities here in Juneau that are collaboration between the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, Perseverance Theater, and Community Schools. That's just one piece of it. There's the front of house, there's backstage, and lighting. And let's talk about the other opportunities as well.
There's a last set of the grouping of workshops that we're doing are all about taking a lead. So those very important positions that help really kind of glue everything together. So the first one is the one that Kari had been talking about, which is the event producing 101, kind of a sort of crash course. And these are the questions you need to ask. These are the things you need to be thinking about when you're going to put on an event, whether that's a show or a fundraiser or any sort of event where you're going to do something. How do you then go about from, aha, we're going to then actually getting that done and doing it well and not spending too much time scratching your head about, like, well, what are the steps we need to do? The section that I'm going to be teaching is kind of a production stage event management sort of course, crash course, mostly focusing on stage management, but for those who are interested in how that might apply to event management or how that might apply to other sorts of things, I'll try and broaden it a little bit to help with that sort of thing as well. But this is something I'm very passionate about, and I think that there's a lot of arts groups in town that could really benefit from the use of a stage manager, and it's not something that most arts groups think about. And so more than anything, I just want to be able to share with people exactly what this person does, the stage manager. Stage manager, what is that? What do they do? It's kind of a little bit mysterious for a lot of people. And then talk to the people who are interested in it. Well, this is what a stage manager does. These are the things that they take care of. And here are the things as somebody working in our community that you might want to ask yourself if you all of a sudden find yourself becoming a stage manager for something.
You had a really good description of a kind of person that makes a good stage manager.
They're the kind of person who keeps the machinery of the art well oiled and cared for and maintained, so to speak. Because they're the person who has to know and know everything and be ready for anything and keep all of the pieces tied together. So it's a really important job, and I think it'd be good to get more people out there, especially in our community, interested in it and able to do it. So
this series of workshops sounds really terrific, and the collaboration and the expertise that's available just really sounds like an opportunity not to be missed if you are interested in volunteering or just knowing more about live shows is what you're really talking about, because there's the theater aspect and then there's the event aspect of it as well. So how do people sign up? What do they do?
They go to the Arts Council website. You could just Google Juneau Arts Council if you want, or you can go to jahc.org, and there's a link on our front page to the Technically Arts information and sign up.
Okay, so it's August 9th through 11th. You could sign up online, and where are the workshops taking place? In a variety of different places, all in one place?
They're taking place in two different locations. Most of them will be at the JDHS auditoriums area. and then the first two sections of the lighting workshop will be happening at Perseverance Theater in our little black box, the Phoenix.
Sounds great. Okay, we're out of time for this section, but I do want to say that I know that the Juno Arts and Humanities Council is celebrating their 40th year this year, and they have a great season up, and Perseverance has announced their season. Can we briefly go over the shows for Perseverance?
Sure. We're opening with God of Carnage. It's a modern comedy about parenting. We're doing the classic Treasure Island. It's straight out of Robert Louis Stevenson's book. We have a world premiere by a playwright from Anchorage called Rush at Everlasting. It's about a woman in her 50s who's remembering the good things and has decided to make a desperate grasp for the good things in life. So it's a beautiful, very poetic play. We're doing Tennessee Williams' play Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, which is about generations and families, and it's that play. It's an amazing play, one of the best American plays ever written. And then the play, which has been a TBA until quite recently, that we're closing the season with, is called Boeing, Boeing, after the aircraft. And it's what happens to an American playboy living in Paris who's got three different flight attendant girlfriends. And when Boeing invents a faster aircraft and they can get between New York and Paris more quickly and have more downtime, his whole plan starts to fall apart. Mm-hmm. And they arrive at his apartment at the same time. It's a really great farce.
It sounds great. It sounds like an episode of Love American Style.
Absolutely.
And also, in closing, I just want to say these all sound great. And season tickets are available for both of these art organizations. And you could go to their websites and do that. And thank you so much for putting on these workshops and coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, July 29th, 2013. It's the birthday of Chester Himes, born in Jefferson City, Missouri in 1909. He was serving a 20-year sentence for grand larceny when he published his first short stories in Esquire. They brought him only temporary fame. He was still forced to work as a ditch digger when he was released. He published If He Hollers, Let Him Go to warm reviews, but the book didn't sell well. His second novel, Lonely Crusade, received universally bad reviews. In his despair, Himes followed other black expatriates to Paris. There he met an editor from a French publishing house who had started a series of dark detective novels, and the editor told Himes, "Get an idea, start with action. Somebody does something, a man reaches out a hand and opens a door, light shines in his eyes, a body lies on the floor, we don't give a damn who's thinking what, only what they're doing. Don't worry about making sense, that's for the end, give me 220 typed pages." Vincent van Gogh died on this date in 1890. He had shot himself in the chest in a wheat field 2 days before and managed to make it home to his own bed. The doctor decided not to remove the bullet, and his brother Theo was sent for. He rushed from Paris to his brother's bedside and reported that his brother's last words were, "The sadness will go on forever." It's the birthday of poet Stanley Kunitz, born in Worcester, Massachusetts in 1905, published his first book of poetry, Intellectual Things, in 1930. In 1971, his volume, The Testing Tree, marked a shift in his work from his early formal style to one that was looser, more personal, and written in everyday language. Stanley Kunitz was named Poet Laureate in the year 2000 at the age of 95, still publishing and promoting his poetry then. The Wild Braid is a collection of essays and conversations about his two loves, poetry and gardening, and was released on his 100th birthday. He died the following spring. And it's the birthday of documentary filmmaker Ken Burns, born in Brooklyn in 1953, but grew up in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where his father was a professor at the university. He studied film and design at Hampshire College, and his first major film was Brooklyn Bridge in 1981. It's his 11-hour television miniseries, The Civil War, that made his name. He has since produced lengthy documentaries on jazz, World War II, the national parks, Prohibition, and two series about baseball. And here's a poem by Donna Messini entitled Slowly. I watched a snake once swallow a rabbit. Fourth grade, the reptile zoo. The rabbit stiff, nose in, bits of litter stuck to its fur, its head clenched in the wide jaws of the snake. the snake, sucking it down its long throat. All throat, that snake. I couldn't tell where the throat ended, the body began. I remember the glass case, the way that snake took its time. All the girls groaning, shrieking, but weren't we amazed, fascinated, saying we couldn't look, but looking? Weren't we held there? Weren't we imagining? What were we imagining? Mrs. Peterson urged us to move on, girls, but we couldn't move. It was like watching a fern unfurl, a minute hand move across a clock. I didn't know why the snake didn't choke, the rabbit never moved, how the jaws kept opening wider, sucking it down. Just so, I am taking this in, slowly, taking it in to my body, this grief. How slow the body is to realize, you are never coming back. Slowly, a poem by Donna Messini from her collection Turning to Fiction, published by W.W. Norton, and used here by permission on The Writer's Almanac. This is Billy Collins for The Writer's Almanac, hoping you will join us next time.
You are listening to KTOO News, Juneau Afternoon, Monday, July 29th edition, to be exact. I'm Joan Partis. Jeff Brown is the engineer and producer of this show, and we have a great show. We have in the studio right now representatives of Big Brothers Big Sisters. Next up is Norm Cohen and a partner to talk about the path to prosperity development competition for entrepreneurs. That's new for Southeast residents, and we'll also spotlight upcoming Girl Scout events. But right now we are going to talk to Torin Ulrichsen and Lena Gilbertson, the program director and recruitment and development director of Big Brothers Big Sisters here in Juneau. Hi ladies.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for having us.
So I hear there is a great raffle going on. Is that true?
It is true. We are currently doing our cruise and fly raffle, and what the raffle is for is a chance to win 2 Alaska Airline tickets, courtesy of Alaska Airlines, and a seven-day cruise for 2 to either Mexico or the Caribbean, courtesy of Holland America Line. And those tickets are $10 each or 6 for 50, which is a really great deal.
And how does one get one of these tickets?
You can either come by our office, which is downtown on 110 Seward Street, or you can just call the office at 586-3350.
Okay. What's the deadline to buy the ticket?
September 3rd.
Okay. And when is the drawing?
The drawing will be September 9th, and you do not need to be present to win. We will call you when you are the lucky winner.
That sounds fantastic. So let's talk about Big Brothers Big Sisters here in Juneau. I understand there's about 120 matches currently between mentors and littles, as you call them. And what's going on? Is there a lot of kids on the waiting list?
There are. We have about 40 kids right now waiting in both the school and community and Johnson Youth Center programs. And about 30 of those waiting are boys. So we definitely always need big brothers.
Okay. Can we talk about the three different programs you were just talking about? You said school, community, and Johnson Youth. What are the differences and the different commitments for those three?
Yeah, I'll pass this one over to Lena.
So we mentioned the school program. So in our school program, we match mentors with elementary or middle school students around town. We're at all of the schools in town. And basically, we will match you with a child who wants a mentor. They're either referred by a teacher or a counselor, or maybe they just heard about it themselves. And you go to their school for just 1 hour a week. A lot of times, people will go during their lunch times. You just hang out with them maybe during their lunch time, eat lunch together, talk, hang out, go to recess, read a book, whatever you want to do together. And then our program that a lot of people have heard about is our community-based program, and that one's a little bit more flexible. Maybe if you have a little bit more time or want to get out about in Juneau, we ask that our mentors meet with their littles 2 to 4 times a month doing, you know, whatever they'd like to do in the community, whether it's going to a movie, going hiking, baking, you know, doing arts and crafts, anything they're both interested in doing. And other than that, we have our Johnson Youth Center program. And that's the center that's over by the hospital. It's for teenage boys who have, you know, gotten in trouble for whatever reason. And some of them would like mentors. So we send some of our big brothers into there. They're matched with a youth in the center, and it's kind of like the school program. They can go for like an hour a week during visiting hours, hang out, play a game, watch a movie, shoot hoops, whatever they want to do together.
And one of the reasons why that program is so important is a lot of those young men are not from Juneau originally, and so their families, unfortunately, are able to come visit them. So these boys are in here for a year or two years and don't have a single visitor. And so it's really important for them to be able to get those visitors and have that extra support to be able to encourage them on their process of really progressing and improving themselves.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a great need, that's for sure. So if people are interested in becoming a Big Brother, Big Sister, how do they do that?
They can go on our website, which is just our initials, so it's bbbsak.org, or they can just Google us and pull up the website or call us at our office, which they can also find the number by Googling, but that's 586-3350.
Okay, and do people have to be 21 and over or 25 and over?
It's actually 18 or older, and it's 18 to, 101. However, we definitely have older volunteers, so don't be discouraged if you are retired or a little bit older. And we do ask for a one-year commitment, so at least someone who's going to be in the Juneau area for one full calendar year, since it's important to make those commitments to those kids.
Right, and while the school and Johnson Youth Center programs are 1 hour a week, pretty structured, you know, during school or visiting hours, the community program, I know you support all these programs. I know you support all the big really, really well with monthly phone calls and training opportunities if need be, but the community matches, they have an opportunity to do a lot of really cool things around town.
Yeah, and the school ones are invited as well. So we offer at least one free activity a month. So we do things like whale watching and picnics, and in the wintertime we do like a skating day and a skiing day. And we have a lot of really supportive groups and businesses in town, so we get free tram passes. Eagle Crest has a really great deal where littles get to go for free if they go with their big. The Rock Dump gives discounts and deals to matches, so a lot of different great places around town. We offer a lot of coupons, like museum passes, so matches definitely don't have to spend their own money. They can do a lot of fun, free things around town.
And that's one of our big things, is we want it to be as easy and cheap as possible for our bigs to be matched with littles.
Okay. So if you are looking for a volunteer opportunity to mentor a youth, there's many different options. There are 40 kids on the waiting list just in Juneau, 30 of which are boys. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So by all means, call these ladies at what number is it?
586-3350. And just to throw out another great way to support little brothers is we can do couples matches. So a couple can actually be paired together with a little brother, just in case your husband doesn't want the full commitment or you don't want the full commitment, you guys can do it together and split that commitment.
I know a couple of people have done that, and that really worked out great.
Yeah, it's fun.
It really worked out great. And the raffle, one more time, those raffles are available to September 3rd. It's a cruise and
tickets. Two airline tickets,
it sounds great. And so you could call the office, or some people might be knocking on your door selling them as well, but you could call the office and buy that as well. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, this is great. And, yeah, if anyone has any questions, please, please don't hesitate to call or go on our website. We are definitely willing to talk to you about all of our programs and help find the perfect fit for you.
That sounds great. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
When you're down and troubled and you need some love and care, and nothing is going right, just close your eyes thinking, 'cause then soon I will be there to brighten up, even your darkest night. You just called out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running to see you again. It's winter, spring, summer, or fall. I think all you've gotta do is call, and I will be there, yeah, yeah.
mentally there. You got a friend.
Listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News in Juno. I'm Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of this show. And Norm Cohn from the Nature Conservancy is here in the studio with me to talk about this really exciting competition. It's called Path to Prosperity Development Competition. Thanks, Norm, for coming in today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Joan.
Oh, it is a really interesting. I read about it in the paper and online, and I think it's really a fascinating jumpstart. So it is a partnership between the Nature Conservancy and Ha'ani, which is a subsidiary of Sea Alaska. Is that correct?
That's correct. And we also have other partners and participants as well, including the University of Alaska Southeast School of Management, JEDC, and the Small Business Development Center here in Juneau. So there's a bigger partnership, though the sort of the lead partners are Ha'ani Community Development Fund and the Nature Conservancy.
Okay, so let's talk about this competition. What is it?
The competition is to try to encourage budding entrepreneurs or people who have good ideas for new businesses to write a business plan that will then be in a competition among others who are writing similar plans for their ideas. And the competition will lead eventually to an award to the two top proposals. One, the award will be for further consulting services that would help them get over the hump to actually be able to start their business. And for those successful businesses, the groups that are working on the project will also be interested in trying to find funding for the startup business. The competition is to has a few goals. One is as a creative way of for conservation actions by creating businesses around natural resources that would be sustainable over the long term. It's also what we think is very important is that entrepreneurship in communities is a very important component of a healthy community. And to the extent that people need help in trying to get over the hump in developing their ideas and making them into businesses through the support that proposal writers will be given throughout the process, We're hoping that that will get these ideas into businesses. And even if people are not the ultimate winners, if proposers aren't the ultimate winners, they still will benefit from the consulting services and the assistance they will get during the application period. Each of the initial applicants, which are due in sort of this first round on September 16th, and there will be 12 chosen to go to the second round, which is the full business plan writing. For those 12, they will receive 10 free hours of consulting services from the Small Business Center here in Juneau to help them develop this business plan, and so it is competitive among all of the proposals. And then we will have an independent group of judges, not related to the Nature Conservancy or Ohaani, making the final decisions as to the two winners, but also that will give the people who have applied and don't make it feedback as to how they did and what things they might do to be beneficial for their business development in the over the long term. And we expect that there will be a that the finals will be announced in January of next year. The finalists will be announced in January of next year. And our plan at the moment is that this be done over 3 years. So there'd be three different competitions and six winners over those 3 years.
That sounds great. And this is open to residents throughout Southeast Alaska, correct?
That's correct. This, if you want to set up a business in a community in Southeast Alaska, here's an opportunity to get that started.
Okay. And does it have to be a new business, or can is it completely confined to new businesses?
No, there's it can be a startup, but it also could be somebody who has an idea who's in business right now who wants to move off into some other area. That's fine as well. So it's not limited at all to new businesses.
Okay. And what about the natural resource part of it? So that, like, if somebody wants to start a restaurant, does that fit into the criteria?
Well, of course, if you wanted to use local foods in your restaurant, that probably is a good connection. But the main idea is that we would like to see those kind of proposals, and the scoring criteria will give more points for those kinds of businesses. But in the end, if somebody has a really good business idea and it rises to the top, then it will rise to the top as well. So it's not limited, but it's really trying to get at those kinds of businesses that use natural resources. And, you know, there's plenty of examples around of opportunities in Southeast, from, you know, mariculture to young growth timber to many things that could be a part of the mix, but it's certainly not in any way limited to those at this point.
Okay, and the deadline is September 16th, and where do people go to apply and find out all the...
Right. There's a initial application that needs to be in by September 16th. It's very simple and wouldn't take a whole lot of work, and then the real work is after September 16th through when the applications are due in December. Now, there was also going to be an information webinar on Monday, August 12th at 5:30, and all of the information can be found at web.org. So it's p2pweb.org. And people who have any questions can call Sean Blumenschein at 586-9251. If they want more information about the competition.
Right. And I just searched for Path to Prosperity Development Competition, and the website came up, and it's really user-friendly. And if, you know, you're thinking, oh, my, this is a lot of paperwork, it's not. It's not typical grant stuff at all. It was really user-friendly and easy to navigate, and really I thought it was an excellent website.
Right. And just to, you know, sort of close, we're looking for businesses that really are trying to meet a triple bottom line. I'm not sure if you've heard of the triple bottom line, but it's a concept that's getting more recognition, and it's businesses that are looking to meet economic, social, and environmental issues and be successful in all areas. You know, we'll see what happens as the competition goes on, but it's generated some interest thus far, and we're really hoping to see a lot of applications as we go through this first year, but there'll still be two more years to go after this one.
That sounds great. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the Path to Prosperity Development Competition. It's a competition for entrepreneurs and existing business owners who are looking to expand their business, and check it out on the web. You could just Google it. Thanks, Norm, for coming today.
Thank you.
What is a watershed? Hey, do you know? It's where water flows through the rains or snows. It's the land beneath the feet where the water comes and goes. A watershed is here and there all around. Starts on higher ground, then it runs on down. It's upstream, downstream, wherever our neighbors are found. And water's where it all begins. Starts as a trickle, then grows real big. From tributary streams, rivers and lakes, ends up in a mountain. That's what the naturalists say. Well, what is a watershed? Hey, do you know? It's where water flows through rains or snows. It's the land beneath the feet where the water comes and goes. Some watersheds are huge, sometimes they're small. Some begin in the mountains and drain near a mall. Some pass through a field, through a ditch, along a road. Even empty in a storm drain, where lots of water goes. Well, what is a watershed? Hey, do you know? It's where water flows up to the rains or snows. It's the land beneath our feet where the water comes and goes. Now keep the watershed healthy where you are. You'll provide a robust habitat near and far. Don't be foolish, never be rude, and dump out chemicals or petroleum crude. After a hard, hard rain and the waters flow, and carries pollutants down to your neighbor's home. And then he rides. What is a watershed? Hey, do you know? It's where water flows after it rains or snows. It's the land beneath the feet where the water comes and goes. Farmlands, wetlands, cities and towns are places through which water runs down. Watersheds are homes for life of all kinds. Let's take responsibility and keep it all in line. Well, what is a watershed? Hey, do you know? It's where water flows up to the rains or snows. It's the land beneath the feet where the water comes and goes. Watershed is here and there all around. It starts on higher ground, then it runs on down. It's upstream, downstream, wherever our neighbors are found.
Hello, you are listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Joan Partis. Jeff Brown is the engineer and producer of this show. It is Monday, July 29th in Alaska's capital city and elsewhere in the Northern Hemisphere. And it is a beautiful day in Alaska today, I think all over the state, but certainly in Juneau. And one of the many things that makes Juneau an amazing place is all the people who cycle through this show, all the people who do amazing things in this community. And we have yet another member of that club. That's Tara Lee Ellis, who works for Girl Scouts. She's the Southeast Coordinator for Girl Scouts of Alaska. Thanks, Tara Lee, for coming in today.
Thank you, Joan.
So let's talk about Girl Scouts. What is going on? Is there kind of the back-to-school fever happening?
Back-to-school fever is definitely happening. And in fact, I'd like to invite any adults interested in becoming troop leaders to lead our girls in Girl Scouting to an open house on August 2nd from noon to 6 p.m. Drop by anytime at the Girl Scout office, 316 West 11th Street.
Okay, that sounds great. And what would people expect when you go and you say, maybe I do want to become a Girl Scout leader? What would they find at this open house?
So just kind of information of how to become a leader, what resources are available to you, kind of what to kind of expect as being a Girl Scout leader, and all the support you have throughout the year and activities that are already planned for you to mentor these young ladies.
Okay, and all right, full disclosure here, I'm a Girl Scout leader in Tara Lee, and the whole organization gives lots of support, so I just want to not break deaf and dumb here.
I'm so proud of your new junior.
Yes, they are new juniors. So there is an event coming up that you don't have to be a Girl Scout for. It's a mother-daughter retreat at Echo Ranch.
Right. It's our annual mother-daughter retreat. And again, you don't have to be a Girl Scout. So if you want to spend one last weekend before school starts at Echo Ranch, call the office. It's $65 per person and includes the food and lodging. They leave Friday night, walk out, and come back on Sunday. And it's a great mother-daughter Girl Scout bonding experience. And even if you're not a Girl Scout, you might be at the end. You'll make some new friends. But it's a great opportunity.
What are the dates for that?
August 16th through the 18th.
Okay, and if people are interested to find out more, what can they do?
They can look online on Facebook at Girl Scouts of Alaska or Girl Scouts of Juneau. There's links to the online registration or paper registration. Or they can swing by the office or give me a call at the office at 586-1710.
Okay, and is there financial assistance available?
There is financial aid available.
Okay, all righty. And then typically you also have this family day. There is a Girl Scout event at the tram. Is
right. September, it's Labor Day Monday always, and it's a back to scouting event at the tram. So if you don't see us at any of the school open houses and you still are interested in getting your daughter signed up to become a Girl Scout, you can come down to the tram, register to become a Girl Scout, and then have a chance to go on the tram with your family that day.
Okay. And let's talk about Girl Scouts. So how old do you have to be a Girl Scout? What are the different programs?
Right. So Girl Scouts are broken into different levels, starting at the DAISY level, which are kindergartners. So if you're going into kindergarten or you're five, you can start at the DAISY level. And that goes for 2 years. And then the next level is brownies from second to third grade. They wear the brown little uniforms. And next is the juniors, fourth and fifth graders. And then going to the cadets, the middle school age. And then it goes to sixth through eighth grade. You're a cadet. And beyond that, you become a senior, a high school Girl Scout for senior ambassadors. And we have troops of all different ages and places here in Juneau.
How many troops do you have?
We currently have 32 troops registered here in Juneau.
That's a lot. And throughout the year, there's all different types of Girl Scout events. Is that correct?
Right. We try to plan a couple things each month for activities to do. I'm really focusing for the older girls, the cadets. I have a couple mystery events coming up. For the younger girls, I have campfires and songs and some outdoor training and an archery series coming up.
Okay. There's also Girl Scout camps.
We just finished with two Girl Scout camps, and there's Girl Scout camp next week at the Methodist camp, which is the overnight resident camp.
It's a sleepaway camp. Is there still room available?
And there's still room, and there's still scholarships available.
Okay, that sounds great. So that's next week, Monday through Thursday. And then once again, the number for...
is 586-1710, if they want more information on
it. All right, so to do the roundup, we've got an open house on August 2nd at the Girl Scout office.
Right, for adults interested or current leaders, come in, check out what we have available to you, and get ready for your troop year. It's going to be a great year in scouting here in Juneau.
Okay, and for the people who are not based in Juneau, do you want to talk about the Southeast programs?
Right, Girl Scouts is all over Southeast, all the way from Angoon up to Yakutat, even all the way down to Ketchikan, and different events are happening, so just stay posted on the Girl Scouts of Alaska webpage.
Right, and I know that some troops become sister troops, like some of the Juneau troops have hooked up with the Gustavus troops, and they've taken trips there, and vice
Gustavus
versa.
And back in Skagway and Gustavus are really big troops, and they love to do trades back and forth. We have a troop coming up from California next week that a troop here in Juneau has been riding and getting to know, and the next year that troop is going to go visit them in California. So
right. What level is that?
That is a cadet level.
Wow, that sounds great. And I know that when my troop went up to Whitehorse this year, the ferry staff was so excited because there was another Girl Scout troop right behind us that was going to Skagway. So it was just like, wow, it's Girl Scout Travel Weekend throughout Southeast.
There are many travel opportunities for Girl Scouts, and it's exciting, and it's, you know, new experiences.
Okay. So one thing, just thinking about the volunteerism, so if you're interested in signing up your daughter, by all means, check it out. You could just search for Girl Scouts in Juneau,
and
Facebook.
And again, we'll be at all the open houses at school, back-to-school fair at the mall on the 17th.
And so Tara Lee could find a troop that's appropriate for your daughter. But if you're thinking about volunteering as becoming a leader in your own troop or starting a new troop, you want to talk a little bit about the time commitment? Because I think people think, oh, wow, that's really daunting. What am I going to do with a group of girls?
Sure. With you, I kind of work with individuals to kind of break it up of how they want their troop to go. It's girl-led. And you can put as much or as little time into it. I have troops that meet once a month. I have troops that are very ambitious, and they meet once a week. And it kind of depends on the select feel of your availability. And I have troops who only come to council events like campfires and songs or foil cooking, things like that. So it's really what you want to partake in, what your girls want to take out of it is the time investment
right. That
you put into it.
And as a Girl Scout leader, I'll say that as we meet other leaders, I have a co-leader, Rebecca Farrell, as we meet co-leaders, you know, we're continually hearing how much fun it is. And we went away this summer with our Girl Scout troop, and to this day, we still say that is one of the most, we had the best time. We were amazed about how much fun it was to travel with 10 9-year-olds, that it was just a blast for the adults.
Some people would freak out, 10 9-year-olds, but they're a hoot. They worked hard for their trip. I was so impressed. Like, they helped in the planning, and, you know, you were there to chaperone, but I think memories are made.
Oh, yeah.
And every day when you're with the Girl Scout troop, memories are made.
It's just really a blast. So, anyway, Tara Lee, thanks for coming in today. And
thank you
if
for
you're
having
interested,
me.
August 2nd, and what's that address again for the Girl Scout?
316 West 11th Street in the Flats, or call the Girl Scout office at 586-1710.
Great. Thanks for coming in.
This is Bird Note. It's just after dawn in the piney woods of Georgia. Suddenly, from out of a hole 40 feet up in a large pine tree, pop four black and white birds. A family of red-cockaded woodpeckers is leaving their night roost. Native to the southeast, red-cockaded woodpeckers differ from most woodpeckers. They remain in cooperative family groups throughout their lives, and they excavate nests in living trees rather than dead ones, often reusing the same cavities for decades. To nest successfully, these woodpeckers need mature, open pine forests, a habitat requirement that has jeopardized their very survival as a species. When John James Audubon walked these woods in the 1830s, the woodpecker was abundant. A century and a half later, the federal government listed the red-cockaded woodpecker as endangered. Habitat loss is the problem. Most mature pines in the southeast have been cut down. The good habitat that remains is fragmented, and breeding woodpeckers are now isolated in ever smaller gene pools. Better management of federal forests and protection of the woodpeckers on private land can slow their decline. But much more needs to be done to ensure the long-term survival of this emblematic bird of the American Southeast. Learn more at birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
Thank you for sharing your afternoon with KTOO News. The weather today, sunny, high 77 to 82, southwest wind to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, clear, lows around 53. Tomorrow, sunny, highs around 75. Tomorrow night, mostly clear, lows around 54. Wednesday, partly cloudy, highs around 72. Wednesday night, partly cloudy, lows around 53. Thursday through Sunday, mostly cloudy, highs around 68 and down to around 51 at night. Juno Afternoon tomorrow is hosted by Martha Moore. Tune in at 3 o'clock and you'll get an update on the Wild Image Project, the Blueberry Arts Festival in Ketchikan, Alaska's Early Learning Network, and the Juno Public Library System with its director, Robert Burr. Thank you for listening.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. K2 also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ox Bay area, tune to K276 AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. In Juno, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juno on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. By a vote of 93-1, the Senate voted this evening to confirm James Comey to be the next director of the FBI. As NPR's David Wellen explained, Senate Republicans agreed at the last minute not to filibuster Comey's nomination, which would have been unprecedented for an appointee for the top job at the FBI.
James Comey was a top official at the Justice Department during the last Bush administration, so President Obama's choice of him to succeed Robert Mueller as FBI director had broad bipartisan support. Patrick Leahy is the Democrat who chairs the Judiciary Committee.
I believe that James...